This episode is brought to you in part by Zondervan, publisher of The Perilous Fight, Overcoming Our Culture's War on the American Family, written and narrated by retired neurosurgeon and politician Dr. Ben Carson. Available now, everywhere you get audiobooks. This episode is brought to you in part by Zondervan, publisher of Ghosted, An American Story. Written and narrated by New York Times best-selling ghostwriter Nancy French, and is available everywhere audiobooks are sold.
This is CT Media.
Christianity Today, you're listening to Music and Meaning with Charlie Peacock. Feeling a bit depressed. So when I was practicing all those scales in order to gain the mastery to play whatever my imagination could dream of, was I already on my way to becoming an anachronism? Musically literate, but literally unnecessary in 2024. I put in the work so I could take flight, start with a scale, and just go off. Isn't this what Bach would have done? Or Keith Jarrett? Does the ability to play like this, extemporaneously, even matter anymore? Has technology made the creation of music so easy that working hard at it makes no sense? Or I wonder, is it just that working hard at music has a lot of different looks and sounds today? Still, it's hard to silence my music teacher father's voice in my head. If you're going to do it half-assed, don't do it at all. Or that old chestnut. If it were easy, everyone would do it. I'm not the only one wondering what the future holds for trained musicians when everyone has access to AI software that'll write a song for you, sing it, and then produce it. Musicians in academia have a lot of skin in the game. It's very personal to them. They're the professors charged with creating the next generation of highly skilled working musicians. And for them, failure's not really an option. Schools of music are built around traditional music literacy skills. That means reading and writing Western classical notation. But they've had to acknowledge that stakeholders, and that includes faculty and all the incoming students, have varied perspectives on what essential music literacy is. Someone has to conduct the Boston Symphony, play jazz at the Lincoln Center, and make beats for Post Malone on a laptop in their dorm room, right? I mean, despite the fact that the bar to music entry is now lower than a detuned low E string on a Les Paul guitar, we're still planning on creating the next generation of human musicians, aren't we?
My name is Matt White. I'm Associate Professor of Jazz Studies and the Chair of Jazz Studies at the University of South Carolina School of Music. We always have to be willing to look at our system and think about how are we serving the students best And how are we getting the outcomes that we need? And sometimes those outcomes are the ability to learn and to problem solve and less about the actual things that we're trying to teach them. And I think like a really good example of that right now is what's going on with music theory. I know that we're not alone in this, is that we're finding that our students are coming in with less and less kind of music theory skills, ear training skills, and it's requiring what we're calling a lot of remediation. But the thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately is that, you know, if 80% of your students come in and they need remediation at theory, doesn't that really mean that maybe what we consider to be the entry level of theory needs to change and how we teach it? And that might mean that the outcomes are different. As we move forward, is thinking more about how our students develop problem-solving strategies and they're creative with the music and they care about learning about music is really important. The thing that really concerns me and where we need to be in the cutting edge of this is that making sure that we understand the use of these tools, but the thing that is really important for me that students develop is this kind of sense of self-discovery and problem-solving in music. And so, you know, whether you understand what a chord is or you understand what a bass movement is, there's kind of that part about creating music and understanding music where you have these aha moments. They might be sitting at the piano working on something, or maybe you make a mistake and you play one chord in the right hand and you play a wrong bass note in the left and you go, oh, wow, this is kind of an interesting sound. And so I think the thing that concerns me about anytime we have stuff, whether that's AI or whether that's songwriting text prompts, is that if these things are kind of taking away that process of self-discovery. And so I don't know the answer to it, but I think that it's one thing we have to think about as music educators is how do we understand these tools and how do we kind of prioritize the right things? Because I think it is our job as musicians is to keep challenging our audiences to kind of accept new things and to kind of grow as listeners as we grow as musicians. And so what I don't want is these things to happen and we for to lose that sense of kind of discovery and that sense of learning that happens through the creation of music.
Ah, Professor White is singing my tune, self-discovery over tools. Absolutely. And I love that he mentioned just playing chords, listening to different bass notes. I used to sit at the piano just like this and play a single chord and then change all the bass notes and listen to that voicing. You're listening to the music of Thavius Beck. Thavius is assistant professor of electronic production and design, songwriting and production at the Berklee College of Music.
Berklee has several different campuses that have several different focuses. And I started teaching at Berklee at the Berklee Boston campus, which is an undergrad campus, traditional 4 years, much more focused on technical skills, right? So that's really more what the Boston campus is about in terms of electronic music, which is where I'm at. So if you're talking about like more traditional instruments and, you know, becoming a jazz virtuoso and whatnot, I don't know that those approaches and lessons have really changed that much for the traditional musician. Where this becomes a completely different conversation is when you're talking about electronic music, which is what Berklee and a lot of institutions have tried to dive more into because clearly there's an interest. Private schools have made decent money getting into electronic music education before the traditional schools have. When I do private lessons, there's a lot of people that I teach that don't necessarily have any music theory background, but they hear certain things that they want to do. I currently teach in a master's program, and it's a one-year intensive program, and people are required to have a bachelor's degree, but it doesn't have to be in a music discipline. So all of them have some sort of music background, whether it was in high school or, you know, some passion or something, but the music theory knowledge is at widely varying levels. Is it needed? It's certainly helpful. If you want to make somebody feel a certain way, generally that happens by using a certain combination of notes that paints a certain musical color. And a lot of that information comes from basic music theory.
and the Grammy goes to... Nobody could touch us. We were taking the dive. Underneath the stars. Keep this till the daylight. Nothing could compare to our young love, alright.
Imagine a teenager writes a simple text prompt for an AI song generator, sort of like a music chat GPT. And they type into it, make a hit song about love and stuff with a dope beat. Well, fast forward, and the song wins a Grammy. Up goes the teenager to accept the award, and he says, "First, I'd like to thank God for giving me such an imaginative, creative childhood. And of course, my parents for getting me an iPhone and an unlimited app budget at the age of 7. It really helped me to think outside the box." The days of scheduled songwriting, confined to dusty writers' rooms in Nashville, like the ones I've inhabited, are far from gone, but now anyone with a phone, an iPad, or laptop can lay down tracks that sound like they were professionally produced. Let me show you how, as I use something referred to as drag and drop.
Hi, everybody. Let's write a song. It's time to drag and drop and play. Let's drag and drop and play. It's time to drag and drop and play. Let's drag and drop and play. It's so easy, everyone can do it.
Okay, what's this mean? Well, take it literally. I will drag this drumbeat file that someone else created, and I'll drop it into my recording software, what's called a DAW. And that stands for Digital Audio Workstation, or what we call a DAW. Ready? Let's drag, let's drop, let's play. Here's a beat. Let's add a bass player. Her name? I have no idea. These drag and drop samples are anonymous. How about a guitar? Here comes a keyboard. And finally, a vocal. Giving every piece of my soul. Giving every piece of my soul. So you don't know to keep me alone. Bam! Just like that. We've got a beat and vocal hook that could rival any studio session. This ease of use has opened up a world of possibilities, allowing aspiring musicians to experiment, create, and share their work like never before. But guess what, though? This is actually pretty old tech. Producers like me, in some way or another, have been dragging and dropping for decades. I mean, even going back to when we were sampling vinyl. The difference between us and the amateur is that this is just one tool among many, and most often only a first step toward imagining and creating. So we work with a beat and loop libraries all the time, of course, but we manipulate the sounds to make them unique to our own production style. Basically, we aren't buying products off the shelf at Target and reselling them. The artist creator is the one who's ultimately in the best position to determine what stays and what goes in the whole editing process, what makes artistic sense and what doesn't. This is the evergreen fairy dust that no off-the-shelf drag-and-drop products or AI will ever match. In general, though, even this old production technique, which is very common to something like GarageBand and Logic, has contributed to the democratization of music creation, there's that phrase again, a lowering of the bar to entry. This beat, or song if you will, we just made, took no musical skill. Sure, took some taste and decision, I get that, but less a functioning musician than a drag and dropper, right? It takes a musician or producer skilled in music production technology to go further with the beat, to innovate and make something new. Like this. This gives credence to the role of digital editing, the necessary skills and musicality needed to imagine, problem solve, create, and make something truly new. This example begs the question, though, is there really any need for traditional musical skill anymore? Has the barrier to music creation entry been erased? Did we ask how low can we go and actually find out? After all, with a software program like Suno AI, I can create a song simply with text prompts about style and instrumentation first, and then include my own lyrics, which I'll type into a text box. A minute later, a song appears.
I was made for you. Look at me. I was made for you. Look and see. Start with.
Just to show you how legit this can actually become, I took this idea, the one you just heard, and I produced it. Let's play it.
I was made for you. Look at me. I was made for you. Look and see. Start with my smile. Watch what I do. Now you get the picture. I was made for you. I was made.
Yes, unreal. Or is it? If you didn't know how I created the song and you heard it for the first time, would you enjoy it? Maybe you already do. As strange as all this new tech may be to someone not in the middle of its advent like me, you know, someone who's trying it out and seeing what it is, well, I just want you to know, we barely scratched the surface of this new music world as it is and is to come. As it turns out, we can lower the entry bar even further and already have. We've made it easy peasy. You see, music consumption is no longer a passive act. From this point forward, it's going to be a dynamic form of expression for music consumers, particularly the social media and music streaming user. We've already seen this with the manipulation of existing popular songs, with TikTokers posting these sped up vocal versions, which some people really dig, and those manipulated versions become their faves. And even more unique, and I would say strange, is that they are enjoying these manipulated versions of songs in small bites, like 30 seconds or 60 seconds. So forget a whole song. A chorus of chipmunk voices will do just fine.
Last night, I was waking, and I walked along the river, and I saw him together with a young girl, and the look that he gave her made me shiver.
Okay, I'm depressed again. It's hard enough today to get a listen, to find an audience, when the audience has millions upon millions of musical song and artist choices. I have this new acoustic vocal music that I'm working on and that I'd love for people to hear come this September. But right now, I'm less concerned about myself than I am my musical children and grandchildren, and all the 15-year-olds sitting in a bedroom somewhere practicing a guitar, writing a song, or making a beat from scratch, or practicing their trumpet, playing scales out of the Arban's Method book. One thing we can say for sure is that music consumers have become active participants in music making, seamlessly blending their consumption with a desire to create. From stem splitting, altering tempos, cloning their own vocal in order to channel a fake Drake, the act of consuming music has become synonymous with personal freedom and creativity. A platform like BandLab has catalyzed this shift, empowering millions to embrace mobile music making and cloud-based production. This newfound accessibility has birthed a new era of artists too, while also setting new speed of light standards and expectations for creative tools. I receive several AI newsletters in my inbox every day. The amount of creators in this space is astonishing. I could spend every day doing nothing but auditioning new AI tools. The aforementioned AI songwriting tool is newsworthy, but there's so much more coming. And the quality of it will continue to improve. Okay, what are you thinking? Are these music consumers using all these new tools now musicians? Or do we need a new word for what it is that they're doing with this stuff? Or can everyone be a musician? Is there no barrier to entry? No specific calling? No necessary skill and ability? Is love for the art unnecessary? What's that, Dad? If it were easy, everyone would do it. No social media platform has played a more essential role in these new inventions and innovations for consumers than TikTok. No question. They intend to... Wait, this is ironic, considering their source. But anyway, they intend to democratize music creation for billions. Fans, like musical artists, will shape trends and culture through music, not in the old way of simply boosting their faves, but by actively reinventing their favorite songs. Spotify and many platforms are following TikTok's lead. It seems like every day, one of these platforms is announcing song manipulation tools for consumers. What does this mean for you? Well, imagine social media and streaming platforms crowded with millions of manipulated and revocalized versions of Taylor Swift's Cruel Summer. This could be the very thing that proves once for all to Swifties that it's possible to have too much Taylor Swift.
Bad, bad boy, shiny tie, bad price, shiny
It's not just about the music, though. It's about the implications of these massive cultural changes, ethically, and dare I say, for our collective mental health, too. I recently spoke with the creator of a vocal replacement AI tool who confirmed to me the reality of millions of manipulated Taylor Swifts on the horizon. He does, in fact, envision a future where everyone personalizes popular music with their own vocals and manipulations of the songs. Don't worry, you don't actually have to know how to sing. The software will do it for you. This novel concept treads a fine line between creativity and chaos. What does this mean for copyright, for artistic integrity, and for the original artists whose work forms the basis of these ubiquitous iterations in the millions? Those are the big questions. AI-driven tools are becoming more sophisticated by the day. Each new innovation raises more questions about authorship and authenticity. When a song is created through AI prompts and algorithms, who can truly claim to be the artist behind it? These are complex issues that social media giants, the music industry, and society as a whole will be debating and grappling with for years to come. Remember, I'm invested. Is it enough to manipulate software? Or is there an irreplaceable value in the years spent mastering an instrument or mastering the art of music production? This isn't an either-or scenario. For decades in my own career, the present and the future has been a hybrid, where traditional musicianship is valued alongside the ability to innovatively use technology. In this way, technology isn't replacing traditional skills. It's expanding the musical possibilities and along the way, creating great artists and great art. What's that? Ah, the feeling of hope again. I don't know any younger musician in Nashville who exemplifies this commitment to traditional musicianship with the innovative use of new tech than the bassist and singer-songwriter, Scott Mulvihill. I visited Scott in the studio to hear his latest creation, The Database. I'll let him describe this combination of upright bass and electronics. Thanks for joining us. Tell us what The Database is.
Okay, I took an upright bass and rigged it with MIDI triggers, 12 of them, and LED lights accompanying each trigger. And my concept for it is to have these triggers on the bass and load them up with sounds that I can play and trigger and launch while I'm playing the bass lines and come up with grooves and compositions and whole songs. It's writing and production at the same time.
Play a bass note for us. Perfect. And now hit one of your pads for us so they know what's going to happen there.
This is just me hitting the pad one time.
Now, do you mind playing the song that goes with all that?
Yeah, sure. This is one I wrote recently, and it's not released or anything, called Human Kindness.
We need forgotten. Remind us kindness. Cut the tree of good and evil. Forgot the pain of other people. Read the headlines, child. There's an illness running wild. A sickness of the heart. It's hollow and it's out of rhythm. But these are not the only symptoms. It poisons the mind and make you go blind. Here, let me read your chart. We need. We need. We need. We've forgotten. Remind us.
There's no app for what Scott does. He is playing the bass, triggering his custom loops and samples, and singing, all in real time. And unlike the abundance ethos of artificial intelligence, there's only one Scott Mulvihill. He is old school scarcity. If it were easy, everyone would do it. The complete democratization of music is an exciting and frightful frontier, filled with possibilities for innovation, collaboration, creativity for all, and all manner of folly and dodgy music. And by the way, dodgy music is a feature of every new music technology. I recently heard Todd Dupler, Chief Advocacy and Public Policy Officer for the Grammys Recording Academy, refer to this as the promise and the peril, which is an apt description of the new digital frontier. As we venture into this uncharted territory, here's how I think we might hopefully and carefully step. First, we can never forget the timeless elements that make music such a profound and universal art form. Human emotion, the imaginative creative spark, our collective history and its shared worldwide multi-generational library of music. All of this humanness transcends any tool or platform, ancient and new. This way of thinking is what theologians and philosophers call a first thing. Another important component of this first thing is that some portion of humanity seems to be gifted and called to music. In Christian theology, there is one who calls, the Creator God. In Christ, God's direct representative, we experience God as missional. He has something for us to do, something for us to join Him in. We are asked to follow Jesus the Christ and to be interested in all that He is interested in and loves. Now, in the ancient story of Exodus, chapter 31, we're reminded that Bezalel, an artist, was chosen by God as the chief artisan because of his skill and ability, and that he was filled with the Spirit of God. For me, this is the model that I hold to as I follow Jesus. With this first thing firmly in mind, heart, and hands, I can interact with music's new technologies. I can embrace some or all. I can work against it for a whole list of substantive but arguable reasons. But the decisions are mine to make, and they're yours to make too. We won't be able to ignore it though. In my way of thinking, it's better to be prepared. So I want to show myself as someone who's ready to hold on to my first things and champion music and people, all the while praying for wisdom and discernment regarding how low a bar is too low. Is there such a thing as too easy? And can everyone be a musician? And most importantly, I want to be ready to cheer on everyone who develops musical skill and ability, even when it doesn't look like mine or like the path I took. I may have been at this music thing for a half a century, but I always have something new to learn. I take it all personally, and I want to stay in the mix. Before we wrap up, let's debunk the story of our hypothetical teenager from earlier in the podcast. You remember, the one with an iPhone and an AI text prompt song, possibly winning a Grammy Award. Like academia, the Grammys are another institution that has quickly made some decisions regarding today's subject. I've asked my friend Susan Stewart, Senior Managing Director of the Songwriters and Composers Wing for the Recording Academy, to explain. So, Susan, why can't our imaginary teenager, who is neither an artist or a songwriter, win a Grammy creating a song with AI alone?
The Grammy Award honors human creativity and not AI-generated material, so if a song is written by a human, it is then eligible for songwriting categories, and if it's sung, produced, or played by a human, it's eligible for a performance category. We certainly aren't ignoring the significant role AI plays in modern music production, and we know it's an evolving situation. But yes, our primary concern is to honor human creators and help safeguard their rights.
There it is. Thank you, Susan. You see, it's not that you can't use AI as one tool among many. The Recording Academy acknowledges this and supports new, innovative music tools. The bottom line is, A work that contains no human authorship is not eligible in any Grammy categories. That was easy. You've been listening to Music and Meaning with Charlie Peacock, a CT Media original podcast. Avail yourself of my latest book, a collab with my wife, Andy, Why Everything That Doesn't Matter, Matters So Much, The Way of Love in a World of Hurt, available everywhere. Goodness and peace to you.
This episode was brought to you in part by the Enneagram and Marriage Podcast, an outreach dedicated to bringing joy, strength, intimacy, and purpose to couples seeking growth. Be sure to visit enneagramandmarriage.com to find your chemistry together again, or for the very first time. This episode is brought to you in part by the Beyond Ordinary Women Ministries Podcast. Do you want to grow in your influence? Bow's episodes feature tips for leaders of any kind, from mentoring one woman to leading a ministry. Browse Bow's podcast at beyondordinarywomen.org.